Good morning, everyone. The Bible is, I will mention, the Bible is full of mentions of thanksgiving. And thanksgiving is our spiritual sacrifice from Psalms. It's our duty, as we're to have it unceasingly. It's to be spontaneous as we go about our day. It's always to be in Christ's name. It's God's will that we do it, and it's actually the theme of heaven, or one of the themes of heaven. We might turn there and look. In Revelations, the 7th chapter, very quickly, verses 11 and 12, the angels stood round about the throne, about the elders and the four beasts, and fell before the throne on their faces and worshiped God, saying, Amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and thanksgiving and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be unto our God forever and ever. Amen. It is going to be a theme of our worship in heaven. We give thanks for an awful lot of things. We give thanks for our food. Jesus did that when he fed the 5,000. We give thanks for wisdom. Daniel did that when it was revealed to him in a dream what the ruler had dreamed and could not find interpretation thereof. We give thanks for converts. We give thanks for answered prayers. Remember Jesus when he was going to see his friend Lazarus, who was sick, and he delayed and dallied and just kind of lollygagged around until Lazarus was dead. And he showed up to raise Lazarus. And interestingly enough, if you ever go to read there, we're not going to do that, in John 11 and 41, Jesus expressed thanks to God for answered prayers before his prayer was answered. Before his prayer was answered. He said, thank you, God, for hearing my prayer. Then he raised Lazarus from the dead. So that's called faith. It's expressed for victory, our salvation. We give thanks at the Lord's table, which we just did, about the body and blood of Jesus. We give thanks for changed people. We have lots and lots and lots and lots to be thankful for. In the United States, in November of 2016, we have more to be thankful for than maybe any other humankind that's ever existed. Now think about that. As far as blessings, we have more to be thankful for perhaps than any man or woman, humankind, that has ever existed since the beginning of the earth. As far as things and opportunities that were granted in the USA in 2016. But I want to caution you that blessings can turn into curses very quickly. Blessings can turn into curses very quickly if we're not thankful for them and they're not purposed right. See, a lot of people with blessings they should be thankful for each and every day, which are actually curses to them. They would be better off without them. Remember the rich young ruler? He said he came to Jesus and said, Jesus, what are the commandments? And Jesus told him the commandments. And he said, well, I've kept all those things. He said, well, you got one more. Go and sell everything you got and come and follow me. And then you, those blessings were a curse to him. They were dragging him down, and sometimes they do. So all of our things, even our relationships, can be blessings or they can be curses, depending upon whether we're thankful for them or we use them appropriately. And obviously in this time of Thanksgiving, we're most thankful for our salvation through Jesus. I want to ask you some questions, two or three questions this morning. I won't ask you to raise your hand, but I was tempted. Okay? If you died today, would you want to go to heaven? Duh. There's a dumb one, right? Everybody puts their hand up. If you died today, would you hope to go to heaven? Yeah. If you died today, would you know you're going to heaven? We have little expressions that we use, and from time to time, it's happened this morning. Happened in a prayer this morning. We have little expressions that we use that almost make it sound like heaven's a lottery. Okay? When I've done it myself, in a prayer for the Lord's table, we'll say, and thank you for our chance at heaven. I understand how that's meant, but I'm not interested in chances. I want a sure thing. Okay? I don't like chances. Even if there's 95 to 5% chance you're going to go to heaven, I don't want that 5% in there. I want 100%. And we in the Church of Christ, I believe, have been guilty of making it almost a chance. I get a chance to go to heaven. No, I don't get a chance to go to heaven. I've got a ticket. Okay? A reservation. Because I'm so good. No, not because I'm so good or because you're so good, but because Jesus is so good. That's what we're going to talk about this morning, because Jesus is so good. When you do, you feel some hesitation when somebody asks you, are you going to heaven? Yes or no? You're going to heaven? And you feel some hesitation, like, yes, I'm going. Then you have devalued the sacrifice. You have said, the sacrifice is not enough for me. It won't get me there. I'm not sure there's enough there to get me there. You have devalued Jesus' sacrifice and overvalued your own sins. That may be the worst sin of all, right there. I think we talk too much about ourselves. We talk too much about ourselves, the good, bad, and the ugly. We talk about things we should improve, and we need to talk about that. Things we do wrong, and we need to talk about that. But somehow we have this notion, if we say we're saved, we're concerned that someone will abuse that privilege, or we're afraid it'll be abused. There's a difference when you're sick and you go to the doctor and he gives you medicine and you get well. Maybe you're thankful for it while you get it, and you're thankful for it for a couple days afterwards, but believe me, you tend to forget it after that. But if you have an illness where you go and you have to take the medicine to stay well, every single day, to stay well, maybe I'm more thankful for that. Maybe I remember that a little bit more. So we take the medicine, Jesus, for us, because sin makes us sick, and we don't like being sick. I want to look at a verse in Romans 6:6. Actually, a whole bunch of verses. In a situation where Paul is talking about God's grace and how big God's grace is, and some people were actually taking advantage. They said, well, if God's grace is so big, then I should just sin more and more and more so that people can see God's grace more, because I'm forgiven of more and more and more. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. I should not purposely sin so that grace may abound. But I want you to understand this morning that we do continue in sin and grace does abound. You may not do it purposely. You may not set in your mind that you're going to go out and sin so that more grace may abound. But the fact of the matter is that each and every one of us does continue to sin. We do sin, and grace does abound. It does abound. Let's read all of it. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Know ye not that so many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death? Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. For if we have been planted together in the likeness of his death, we should all be also in the likeness of his resurrection, knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him. That's dead. Dead. That the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. Sin has no hold on us now. Doesn't mean you don't sin. It means it has no hold on you now. So I want you to think about how you feel if someone asks you, are you going to heaven? Because I think we have a real problem with feeling somehow bad or wrong in saying, yes. Not I hope, not I have a chance, But yes, I'm going to heaven. Because somehow we think that makes us feel like we're building ourselves up. We're making ourselves something special. We're not making ourselves something special. We're realizing that Jesus is something special. That's what's going on. Thankful for Jesus. All the things that we had to give thanks for, He is the one. And I really I'm going to try, and I encourage others as well, to talk less about ourselves in worship and more about Him. Because I can beat myself over the head about how I act, what I say, and forever. I'm still going to be dependent on grace may abound. I need to talk about Jesus. That's what worship is about. There was a segment on television the other night. I don't really remember if it was the local news or the national news. I think it was local news. So this lady who had started a business in her home, she's making capes. And she sends these to, as I understood the story, to disadvantaged children, children who are working with some handicap of some kind, sends them these capes, and shows them these kids got these capes on. They're running around like Superman, Batman, whatever they want to be, but they're super something, super something. Don't you wonder occasionally if Jesus wouldn't be better if he had a cape? A cape. Somehow it might represent to me more how super he really is. You know, if you were asked you who your hero is, what would you say? If anybody ever qualified for being a hero, it was Jesus. Jesus. So what I want to do for just a little while that I have this morning is I want to talk about Jesus. Because I think he's worthy to be talked about. And I want to talk about it not from necessarily our standpoint looking at him, but looking how he felt about it. How he would have felt about it. So I'm going to start. I just picked these out because they were the ones that impressed me at that moment. And I did it again. It'd probably be something else. But I want to start in Luke, the second chapter, and verse 41. Luke 2 and 41. So this talk is not really about Thanksgiving, except it's thankful for Jesus and a little worship and hero worship here. 41. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover, and when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. When they had fulfilled the days as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey. They sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance, and when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. It came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. All that heard him were astonished at his understanding and his answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said to him, "Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. Do you understand what you've done to us? Do you understand what you put us through? 3 days we've been looking for you. This could have been a kidney. You could have been on the side of a milk jug. 3 days we've been looking for you. And we think that you've abused us." He said unto them, "How is that you sought me? Wist you not, didn't you know that I must be about my Father's business?" And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. I'm not surprised. What were you like? There's a few in here that won't have to think very long. What were you like when you were 12? So that's about 6th, 7th grade, okay? 6th or 7th grade. What were you like when you were 12? What can you even tell me about what happened when you were 11 or 12? Let's see. 6th grade. What do I remember about 6th grade? I remember as class president in 6th grade, I always got that job. And I remember missing out on playing basketball because I got the measles. 6th grade, you don't have organized sports yet, so we practiced a little bit in PE, and we were going to have kind of an organized game. Get the cockeyed measles. 2 days before or 3 days before. Aren't I right about that? Am I remembering right? You were there. I know you were there. Okay. That's about it. Can't tell you who my teacher was. Don't think I remember that. What were you doing when you were 12? Well, what Jesus was doing when he was 12 was thinking about you. He was about his Father's business. He was sitting in a temple with the most learned men in the nation, not only asking questions, but giving them answers that they didn't have. Can you fathom the responsibility on a 12-year-old? And when you're 12, sometimes it's an awesome responsibility if Dad tells you to sweep out the garage. That can be pretty awesome. Imagine being 12 years old and having the weight of the world's sins, past, present, and those to come, on your shoulders and knowing it. At 12. And knowing that you had 21 years to carry it. 21 years to carry it. To walk around and not make one teeny, tiny, small mistake. 21. What if we told you your life depended on getting through one day? One day with no sin. Break you out a little bit in a sweat? Hell or heaven will depend on if you get through this day, 24 hours, without a sin. Now, we're not talking about murdering somebody. We're talking about a hateful thought. Okay? We're talking about a misspoken word that wasn't quite true or qualified for gossip. One day, that's all I'm asking of you. One day. Heaven or hell depends on it. 21 years. 21 years Jesus walked around with that cape on. 21 years, and never once, day, night, good day, bad day, stormy day, cloudy day, sunny day, didn't matter, not once did he make the tiniest, teeniest little mistake. James 2:10 says, if you've offended in one point, you've broken all the law. If you'd made one mistake, you, when asked if you were going to heaven, would raise your hand and say, no, I'm headed for hell. If Jesus had made one mistake in 21 years, you would be headed for hell and so would I. One mistake in 21 years. Can you imagine the responsibility, the weight on your shoulders, day in and day out for 21 years? And during this time, he's sitting and talking with people who are supposed to be the most learned people with more answers than anybody else, asking them questions they don't know how to answer and giving them the answers. For pity's sakes, what are you guys doing? Some of you guys have been here for 40, 50, 60 years, and I'm asking you some, I think, fairly simple questions. In Jesus' mind, fairly simple questions. You don't know the answer. What's going on here? Is there anything more frustrating than dealing with a group of people who are supposed to know something who don't know it? Is there anything more frustrating than that? You catch the employees doing something that, for pity's sake, we've talked about that 100 times, you've done it 1,000 times, and then you did it that way. Pull your hair out. Jesus did that day in, day out, without sin, for 21 years. 21 years, not one sin. Because in 1 Corinthians it said a little leaven would leaven the whole loaf, and that was sure true of Jesus. A little teeny bit would have condemned you to hell. One mistake in 21 years. Just one. Well, he's got my hero status already. I've got him a cape. I'll make it a little tighter. Matthew 8 and 20. Oh, makes it read right if you get into Matthew instead of Mark. There we go. 18. Now when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave commandment to depart unto the other side. And a certain scribe came and said to him, Master, I follow thee whithersoever thou goest. Jesus said to him, Careful, the foxes have holes, the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. You ever slept on the ground? What's that new pillow? It's on television, made in Minnesota. My pillow. Yeah, I have one of those. Margaret steals it, but I have one. No, she has her own. My pillow. Because I like that, you know. I like clothes that fit nice. I like clothes that are clean, that feel good. I like to get in the car, have a seat fit my posterior. You know, I like to ride in comfort. Turn the heater on if it's too cold. Turn the air conditioner on if it's too hot. I like to, you've all like to eat good things. You know, I like that. I want you to think with me for just a while on Jesus. And this is not a word we use for him very frequently. But Jesus' toughness. His toughness. This is a being who this is said of. Giving thanks unto the Father which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son, who we're talking about now, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature, for by him were all things created, including my pillow. For by him were all things created that are in heaven, that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things. By him all things consist. He is the head of the body of the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. Does God, did Jesus, appreciate comfort and bodily pleasure? Does Jesus, or did Jesus, appreciate comfort and bodily pleasure? Well, obviously he did. He created it for you, didn't he? All kinds of it. That's what we just read in Colossians. He made it all. All the comforts that you enjoy, he created them for you. So obviously he does appreciate comfort, and he does appreciate pleasure. In Luke, one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat. And behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment and stood at his feet behind him, weeping. He began to wash his feet. You ever had your fish washed? You ever had your feet washed? You ever had your feet rubbed? You know, if you want to score points, your wife, your husband, kind of rub their feet once in a while. It doesn't smell that bad. It's okay. Rub the feet once in a while. Began to wash his feet with tears and did wipe them with the hairs of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee which had bidden him saw it, he spake within himself, saying, This man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him, for she's a sinner. He should know. Jesus answering said unto him, Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee. And he said, Master, say on. As if Jesus needed permission. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors, the one owed 500 pence, the other 50, and when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him the most? Simon answered and says, I suppose that he to whom he forgave most. He said unto him, Thou hast rightly judged. And he returned to the woman and said unto Simon, Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house, thou gavest me no water for my feet. She hath washed my feet with tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss. This woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. Jesus appreciated comfort. He appreciated pleasure, but he had no place to lay his head. He had a rock for a pillow. There's my pillow for you. A rock. Have you ever asked yourself what would have happened if Jesus had been born and lived in a mansion? I mean, he's certainly worthy. What if he had been born and lived in a mansion? How would that have affected his message? This same toughness was on display when he was tried and whipped and crucified. Now we say that's love, and it was love that was the driving thing, but that's toughness. That's toughness. That's knowing what you're about and hanging on to it no matter what. That's toughness. They were surprised he wasn't dead already. He was still talking, and he wasn't just babbling. He was making sense. Sir, behold thy mother. Mother, behold thy son. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Even to the end. Father, to thy hands I commend my spirit. But now he's dead. This man was tough. Yeah, I ripped open this thumb yesterday, but if you took that, actually it was kind of an experience to give yourself a shot in your thumb, but it was, if you took a cut like that, doesn't have to be a big cut, we'll give you a half an inch long cut somewhere, we're not exposing organs or anything, and we just took it and we laid your hand out on the table and we rubbed sand in it. Just rub sand in it. It's an inch long cut. Rub sand in it. Jesus took a back that was ripped apart. Ripped apart with the whips. Laid it on a cross and rubbed it up and down that heavy, grained, splintery cross. Because that's the only way you can breathe on a cross. Lift yourself up with your legs. Let yourself back down because your legs won't hold you any longer. Lift yourself up with your legs. Let yourself back down so that your legs won't hold you any longer. For hours. That's taking sand and putting in an inch long cut and amplifying it an imaginable number of times. This man was tough. He was tough. While we're here in Luke, we'll just stay in Luke and go over to Luke, the 8th chapter. Because I want to keep creating this cape. Luke, the 8th chapter, and verse 41. Behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house, for he had only one daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay dying. But as he went, the people thronged him, and the woman having an issue of blood 12 years, which he had spent all her living upon physicians. That's pretty easy to do, by the way. See, so Obamacare isn't a new thing. A woman having an issue of blood 12 years, that is free. And a woman having an issue of blood 12 years, which he had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed of any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment, and immediately her issue of blood staunched. And Jesus said, Who touched me? When all denied, Peter and they that were with him said, Master, the multitude thronging thee and pressing, and saith thou, Who touched? What are you talking about? People touching all of you. What are you talking about? There's people all around us. You're saying, who touched me? Jesus said, somebody touched me. For I perceive that virtue has gone out of me. And when the woman saw that she was not hid, she came trembling and falling down before him. She declared unto him before all the people for what cause she had touched him, and how that she was healed immediately. And he said unto her, daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace. Can you imagine being so filled up with goodness that you could feel when it leaked out? Can you imagine feeling so full of God's goodness that you could feel it when it accidentally, you didn't mean to have it leak out, it leaked out when a woman touched you? What has she done to deserve that? Well, it said in the last verse that she's had some faith. She had something that made her press through the crowd and touch him. And she, in the chapter before, lived a great life, gave to the poor, worked at the food kitchen, helped the sick. Was at every service. Prayed too many times a day to count. Read her scriptures. What did she do to deserve this? Nothing. Nothing. She hadn't resolved any major character flaws that we know of. We didn't know that she'd forsaken any major sins. But look at the speech of praise that she gave at the end. Can you imagine someone so good that they can feel it when goodness flows out of them? You and I might enjoy the feeling of when we do something good and we let the goodness that we get through God flow out of us to somebody else. Can you imagine being so full of it yourself that you could tell when it accidentally left you? That's a cape. At least that's worthy of a cape. The last one I have is in John 8. Jesus went up into the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him. He sat down and he taught them. And scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery, and when they had set her in the midst, they said unto him, and imagine the scene. I mean, we're sitting, we're in a group like this. He's teaching. Suddenly these people interrupt the proceedings. Half drag, half push. Otherwise bully this woman into the midst of the crowd. Set her down, no doubt weeping, fearful, who knows what things she's feeling. Kind of a look you see on their face. Oh boy, look what we got. This should be fun. They say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what sayest thou? Thus they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him, but Jesus stooped down with his finger wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. There's a place for ignoring things. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said to them, tell you what. This is my paraphrase. Tell you what. The one of you who hasn't sinned, you get to throw the first rock. He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. That's all I said. This is no long, lengthy discourse. That's all I said. He that is without sin gets to throw the first rock. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. When they heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, that may have been a miracle in itself, considering who it was, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last, and Jesus was left alone, and a woman standing in the midst. Everybody's left. She's here. Jesus says, okay, all you people that are looking down on her, caught in the very act of adultery, Horrible sin. God said it was a horrible sin. She's caught in the very act. Caught in the very act of adultery. Okay. One of you that doesn't have sin gets cast the first rock. And he ignores them. He stoops down and starts doing something in the dirt. And he looks up and none of you are here. You've all gone. And it's just him and her. That's it. They've all left. Not just the accusers. They all left. When Jesus had looked up at himself, he saw none but the woman. He said to her, "Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee?" She said, "No man, Lord." Jesus said to her, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." Here we have this woman, a horrible thing. We don't know any of the circumstances of her being caught. We don't know where the male party is that was involved in this issue. But he isn't mentioned. He that is without sin cast the first stone. Does Jesus know you? How'd he know? How'd he know there wasn't one person in there who could have thrown a rock? Because he knows you. And he knows me. And he looks at us and he sees that sin. Now, how do you think he feels when he feels it, sees that sin? I fear that many times we feel only the disgust, the filthiness. How about a little pity? How about a little pity? A little caring that this person has fallen just like you fell, and the person before you fell, the person before you fell, the person before you fell. How about a little pity? Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. If you want to say that you're going to heaven, not that you have a chance of going to heaven, not that you want to go to heaven, not that you hope to go to heaven, I'm going to give you the keys, okay? These are the keys. Number one, recognize your sin, because Jesus certainly sees it. He knows every single one of them. Every single one, without exception. You're not going to slip one by, not one. Recognize your sin. Then you have to accept Him into your life, because we're not big enough. Folks, we aren't good enough. We're never going to be good enough. We have to take Him and be baptized and adopted in Him, because He is big enough for all of us. He's big enough for all of us. And we have to depend on Him and believe that He forgives those sins. Not that He might forgive those sins. Not that He wants to forgive those sins. But that He did forgive those sins. They're gone. They're gone. I know a lot of people walking around with sins. They asked God to forgive a long time ago, but they've never forgiven themselves. Never forgiven themselves. What? You think Jesus is not big enough to forgive that one? Think He doesn't care enough to forgive that one? Think you're something special? You're something special, all right, but not because of your sin. Something special, all right, because Jesus loved you and died for you. And He's special. If we aren't wearing the capes, He is. And last, we need to worship Him. I need to spend more time thinking about Him and what He's like, because He is the key here, not me. He is the key. Not me. Is it important that I try to act in certain ways and I speak in certain ways and I live in certain ways? Yeah, that's important, but when it's all said and done, It's Him that's important. He's the one to be worshipped, not me. If I do everything the way He wants me to, and I show up the gates of heaven, they're going to worship me? They're going to worship Jesus. That's who they're going to worship. He's the one that deserves worship. You're not ever going to make yourself worthy by how good you get, how much you know, how well you act. If you're worthy, it's because Jesus said so. That's only one. That's the only reason. I want us to work on our attitudes. Because I want us to be able to say, when someone asks you, are you going to heaven? I want us to be able to say, yes! And believe it. And if you say yes and don't believe it, you need to look at the man a little bit longer. You need to look at Jesus a little longer. You need to consider how big He is. How great was the sacrifice. And believe me, He does have grace to abound. He has it all. I need to do a little bit more hero worship. A little bit more hero worship because He is the center of all that's going on. We were never the center of it. You know that. The Bible starts with mankind and ends with mankind. It was never about us. It was about Jesus. It was about Jesus. He's a star. He's a hero. It wasn't about you and I. We're along for the ride on His cape. And He'll take us through. He'll take us through. I don't want to ever doubt that I have a place in heaven. I want to know it. I want to believe it more every single day. Even on a day I'm bad. Even on a day I say things I shouldn't. Even on a day I do things I shouldn't. I think things I shouldn't. I want to know. At the end of that day, I have a place in heaven. Not because I was good, but because He's good. Are you going to sin? Yeah, you're going to sin. And yes, grace will abound. It will abound. If you would like to take advantage of that, be able to live your life as you go day by day, whether you have a good day or a bad day, whether you do good that day or bad that day, at the end of it, knowing that all you have to do is look to Jesus, be one of His, and no matter what your day was like, if you died that night, you would be in heaven. That's what this is about. And you want to talk about Thanksgiving? You want to talk about being thankful? There's something to be thankful for. There's something to be thankful for every single day. We're off the invitation as we stand and sing the closing song.